From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond, California.
San Jose.
Union City.
Eastside. Jackson.
I'm from the Campbell area.
Hayward.
Coming up, we'll ride along with a team trying to make a dent in San Francisco's homelessness problem.
Everyone eventually may hit a breaking point where it's like, today, I gotta get off the street today. Today's my day.
Then we'll meet the Black Sheep, a street family that provides first aid to their fellow homeless.
Us hanging out together and spending the time together, that's the real first aid.
And we'll hear a personal story about returning to prison.
I let so many people down who were looking up to me and just expected more of me, and that was devastating.
Hope and help where you may least expect them, today on Cross Currents. Last week, the Coalition on Homelessness published a report that brings to light the criminalization of homeless people in San Francisco. The report is called Punishing the Poorest, and it notes how nearly 3 out of 4 homeless people surveyed have been approached by the police in the last year. They were given citations for sitting or sleeping or asked to relocate. Almost half of the homeless surveyed report having their belongings confiscated by the police. It also found the police officers rarely provided referrals to social service agencies. But the coalition makes it clear that police officers are not supposed to be social workers. That's where the San Francisco Homeless Outreach Team comes in. While most people are on their way to sleep, San Francisco's Homeless Outreach Team, or SFHOT, is just beginning its graveyard shift. The 24-hour patrol team responds to the immediate needs of the thousands of people living on the city's streets. Some need blankets or medical attention. There are also legal issues like noise violations, public urination, or blocking the sidewalk. Other cities may call in police squads or ambulances to address these situations, but those responses can be costly or seen as too punitive. The HOT team provides a lighter touch. And they won't disappear when the crisis is over. They're doing the slow and sustained work of building bridges out of homelessness, one familiar face at a time. KLW's Liza Veal rode along with the HOT team in this story from our archives.
There are usually only a few points of contact between the world of San Francisco's homeless and the rest of the city. Passers-by do or do not give change. Some residents do or do not face losing their own homes. And then there's the HOT team. They work on the street with people who are homeless every day, like rope ladders the city throws out at night, trying to make a path back.
Knock, knock, anybody home?
Home, in this case, means a tent or tarp. We're under a tangle of freeway overpasses where 101 divides SoMa and becomes 80. I realize I'm here every day. We're underneath my route home.
Your husband's out here with you? Just not here right now?
Yeah,
okay,
right,
so
right now.
Sometime this evening, someone's going to roll by with a couple blankets for you, okay?
Okay.
One of the two SFHOT teammates I'm riding with, Kathleen Lee, points up at the overpass. She tells me during this winter's huge storm, many people stuck it out.
Many, many people.
Even though the city organized emergency shelters.
I have one gal say, I'm from Louisiana. I'm used to hurricanes. Bring it. Just bring it.
Tonight, the HOT team is making the rounds, checking in and offering services to each person they meet, like Jennifer Hans Williams.
They offered a shelter bed for a woman that I can't be in shelters because of my borderline personality disorder. I can't be around people. It makes me go panic.
Williams and her husband seem to be in their 30s. They look exhausted. Their big coats are worn out. Williams says, beyond the panic, the other reason she doesn't want to head to a shelter is because she'd be separated from her partner.
My husband and I are both positives, you know, with HIV, so we can't be separated. We have to take our meds every day. He's my baby, and we're healthy because of each other. And if we're not together, he'll go downhill. And I'm not going to let that happen. We'd rather be on the street. We want to go inside, though.
The HOT team offers them gloves and socks, and then we head off along the row of tents and makeshift shelters lining the chain-link fence. People pop their heads out and chat with Lee and her teammate, Scott Prentice. I'm not allowed to record the exchanges because of strict confidentiality policies, so I watch out of earshot.
So did you just ask them, do you need anything, or did you ask them specifically?
specific thing?
I offered services that we are able to fulfill right now.
Everything from ponchos to drug rehabilitation, withdrawal help, or shelter beds. What's surprising is how many people say no to all of the above.
If they don't want anything, I'll always tell them to call us. I'll tell them I will definitely come back and check on them. We're back here all the time.
And did you offer those people shelter?
Oh, yeah. Well, many times. All these people don't want shelter. They have tents.
Yeah, you're dry, you look warm.
The rain starts to ease up. Lee tells me the HOT team sees getting their clients into shelter as a first step.
It feels like a more tangible connection to other services possible.
But there are a lot of reasons people would rather stick on the street.
I don't like shelters. I was raped in a shelter in Portland, Oregon. So I try not to go to them.
That's Christopher Posen. He's 23 now.
Been homeless since I was 15.
Posen is baby-faced, but unsmiling. He says surviving on the streets is not just about self-defense. It's also about having people to depend on.
My best friend, he's got a heart of gold. Every single time I've had my backpack stolen, he's the one that's found it. Or found a new one for me.
He thinks his route off the streets will be finding a job.
There's nothing more in the world that I want than to get a steady, real job.
But he says he's been turned away for not having a home address. He manages to find gigs like landscaping, restoring windows.
I'm a glazer. So I've done that.
What if you were going to be homeless for the rest of your life?
I might kill myself if I knew that I would never, ever get off the street. I'd probably kill myself.
This is Baines. Go ahead. 013.
All night long, the HOT team is getting calls from the police department, the fire department, and 311. Like this one, to pick up a guy in the Castro, tripping on hallucinogens.
Oh, there he is. I got him.
Hey, how are you?
The HOT team came. We negotiated on what my name was and my birthday and my disembuality and the fact that I own Jupiter.
Oh man, your chariot has arrived.
He follows them to the car and they head off to a shelter. The night I rode along with the HOT team was not filled with crisis. But what struck me is the stasis, the constant, routinized suffering.
You've probably never experienced that. It's really strange. It's a really strange place to be. It's its own kind of slight mental illness because it's kind of electric and tingly. You really are on high alert all the time. It's like your most fearful time, and that's where you stay.
That empathy comes from personal experience. Lee has her own story. For years, she lived in a house in Sacramento with her partner. They had their own business, painting and renovating houses.
And we also had a heroin habit that was decades old. It was our own little secret.
In the economic downturn, their business went under.
We just lost work and we hung on for about 9 months and then ended up with our hound dog and us in our little car. And we were recycling, trying to maintain our habits. And then, of course, when you stick your head in enough trash cans, you're going to get sick. So we got really sick. And then the car blew up at that same time.
The HOT team found them right as they hit rock bottom. They gave her and her partner antibiotics and vouchers for heroin detox.
And now we've both been clean for over 5 years.
Are you still together?
Yeah. Oh, we've been together 31 years. That part's not going to change, yeah.
They live in the city's depleting stock of SROs, or single-room occupancy buildings. Most of the people the HOT team meets every night, they won't be able to help. They say most are not able to meet them halfway. But
you never know who's going to want it until you engage and ask every single
right.
person.
And then someone that doesn't want it for months or years finally just gets sick and tired and will say, okay.
Everyone eventually may hit a breaking point where there's like, today, I got to get off the street today. Today's my day.
SF HOT exists so that when that happens, people don't have to try to do it alone.
Lives change. That's the coolest thing ever. So, look, here I stand before you. You can be different next year than you are this year if you just walk this way. Just one step today. Just one.
In San Francisco, I'm Liza Veal for Cross Currents. Okay.
Crosscurrents. I'm Hanat Baba. The SF Hot Team works from the outside, identifying people in need and helping them as they can. On average, however, Hot can only place half of the people they serve into permanent housing. Like the police, their ability to help is restricted. So sometimes that support needs to come from within. The next time you're in San Francisco's Fisherman's Wharf, if you look carefully, you'll see a symbol of this support, a black cross that local homeless draw on their belongings. It's the coat of arms for the Black Sheep, the area's unofficial homeless first aid squad. Their mission is to provide others living on the street with care and minor medical services.
Bump scrapes, bruises, abrasions, the occasional stab wound, a lot of burns and stuff like that.
Doc runs the crew. He and most of the Black Sheep go by nicknames on the street for privacy and safety reasons, so we'll use them in this story. They're not trained medical professionals, but they carry first aid kits and supplies that most people can't afford and try to help however they can. KLW's Liz Pfeffer spent a day with the Black Sheep and brought back this story.
That's Mama, Little Wolf, Scully, Forrest, and Armando, and the dog is Ninja. And this is my girlfriend, MJ.
Hello.
They call me Doc for a reason. Like, we keep supplied with basic first aid kits, along with, you know, I've got, like, a little trauma kit in case we come across, like, you know, somebody that's really split open or we need to dig deep or anything like that.
A lot of it just comes down to common sense stuff, you know, things that your mom used to do for you when you fell and skinned your knee.
If it's anything major, we always tell people, well, I'm not a real doctor and she's not a real nurse. But what we will do is book an appointment at the hospital and give them the cab fare or the bus fare in order to get over there and see a real doctor.
It just doesn't really occur to people when they're out here that they need to do things to take care of themselves that way. And we're all about early prevention because staph and different infections like that run rampant.
We're human, man. Straight up. It's about feeling better. Every day that we wake up, we are pulled to the wharf to see our family and make sure that they're all right. We make our money down there. We entertain. She sings. I dance.
Hey, 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 hey. Your lipstick stains on the front lobe of my left side brain. I knew when we collided, you're the one. On a good day, I can make like $30 an hour. On a bad day, I'll make like $1.30 all day long. Hey, soul sister, ain't that a mister on the radio?
You can get ghosted for a while. It's what we call it. It's just basically people act like you're not there. And to me, it's I would rather somebody, you know, turn to me and say something in disgust than nothing at all. You can only get ghosted so many times in a row before it. Yeah, it starts affecting you emotionally. And I'll never forget it.
I feel like we see the very worst in humanity at times, and then sometimes we see the very, very best in humanity.
We find places to sleep sheltered, and we take, you know, rather good care of ourselves and stuff like that, so we realize the advantages that we have. And if we're ever going to give back to our community or anything like that, this is the time in our life. We came to the realization one day when we were all hanging out that each and every one of us was pretty much the black sheep of their family. And that us hanging out together and spending the time together, that's the real first aid. You know, we try and
let them know someone cares.
Yeah, let them know that there's a flock there for them. You know, even if you're a black sheep, there's an entire flock of black sheep out here, whether you know it or not.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Another place where strong networks form is prison. San Quentin State Prison provides support for inmates with programs to help people adapt back into society. One of those projects is the San Quentin Prison Report, where this next story comes from.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell. You see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop.
After spending 25 years in prison for a first-degree murder, Jesse Reed was finally preparing to be released. He vowed that he would never return to prison and looked forward to starting over with a new life on the outside. But once he was free, life became a series of challenges piling up one on top of the other. Greg Eskridge has the story.
My focus was getting out of prison and not staying here, not making this my home forever.
Reed's desire to get out of prison came true. On June 11, 2009, he was released after serving over two decades behind bars.
It felt good, to say the least. And when you take it all in, and for me to realize that after all those years, it just took one man to say, let him go. And I was free and it was all over with.
Reed spent the vast majority of his time in prison, preparing himself for release. Once out, he started a janitorial service and he says he was on the right track.
However, I wasn't prepared for a lot of the emotional things that I would face when I got home.
18 months after his release, Reed's mother passed away from cancer. Shortly after his mother's death, his aunt became sick with the very same illness that claimed his mother.
All of this stuff just happening around the same time, within the same year, and it's just like one thing after another, one thing after another. Emotionally, I was just in a depressed state at the time. I didn't know how to ask for help. My pride, my ego was in the way.
Losing his mother and faced with the possibility of losing his aunt sent Reed into a downward spiral.
I had got high one night, and a couple days later, my parole agent came by and tested me, and it came back dirty. I snorted some coke. And so all these pressures, I just got hot, and I, you know, trying to escape what I was feeling.
Every inmate leaving prison has to sign what's called conditions of parole. Reed's conditions were no drugs, alcohol, or narcotics. Since he tested positive for cocaine, he found himself back in prison.
I had let so many people down who were looking up to me and just expected more of me, you know. I let down, I had hurt, and that was devastating.
Reed has a morning ritual, which he says keeps him focused and gives him hope.
Look out over the bridge and the lights and the water, the lights glistening off the water, and it's a beautiful sight. And, you know, I know that that's freedom there, out there, physical freedom. And I stand there and I look out and I pray, I talk to God. You have to see yourself out of here. Before I parole, before, I used to go and look out that window then, you know, and I find myself doing it again because I want to see myself free.
Reed is going on his third year of his violation, and he must remain in prison until the Board of Prison Terms deems him suitable for parole again. While Reed waits for another opportunity, he spends his days attending addiction meetings, and he uses his singing as a means of therapy.
Life can bring you happiness, and life can bring you grief too. But how you deal with your life is only determined by you.
Reporting from SQPR, I'm Greg Eskridge.
The San Quentin Prison Report is a partnership between KALW and the prison that trains inmates to be journalists. For more stories from the San Quentin Prison Report, go to KALW.org. And now it's time for your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. 50 years ago, in 1965, San Jose resident Andrew Montgomery was inspired by Martin Luther King's march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. Andrew was deeply offended by the laws preventing African Americans from renting and buying homes in certain areas of San Jose. So he started up a chapter of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality. After hearing about Martin Luther King Jr.'s march of 1965, Andrew and his friends wanted to follow in his footsteps right here in the Bay Area.
One of the members of CORE called to say, "Andy, I'm going to march from San Jose to San Francisco," and which was about the same distance as Selma to Mobile, about 50-odd miles.
Oh, maybe Montgomery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I said, "Hey, that's a good idea." Now, this was probably on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And the idea caught on, and we organized a rally on Friday evening at the St. James Park in San Jose, where we usually did our rallies. And the word got out, and now we're just, the park was full, and we made our speeches, told why we were doing it, and it was about 6 o'clock. It was raining, come to think of it. Rain started to fall. And I said, "They marched in the rain in Selma, and they didn't let anything, and we're not going to let us stop. We're headed for San Francisco." Came down off the podium, started to walking. After we got to First Street, went up first, and after about probably a half mile up, I asked, "Is anybody behind us?" And that's when I looked back, and the line was, you couldn't see the end of the line. There were people that came to that rally that didn't get back home until Sunday evening. They got so caught up in it, and the churches heard about it, they would open their doors, and that's where we'd spend the evening, get up in the morning and march. And we got into San Francisco on Sunday afternoon. The success that came from that movement, it changed the face of America.
Andrew Montgomery was 84 years old at the time of this interview and was living in Oakland on Martin Luther King Jr. Way. Find out how to take part in San Francisco's StoryCorps at KALW.org. And we want you to take part. It's because of you that we are listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Rachel Dornhell, Marcy Fraser, Emma Nobel, Lizak Shalit, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Angela Johnston and Jeremy Dalmas line produced the show. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll head to a historic Oakland neighborhood where the minimum wage is proving a tough sell.
I talked to the owners. They have decided to close. We are not talking about only the business owners closing shop. We are talking about so many employees that are losing jobs.
Working with the minimum wage. Tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by Sun Haze. The group will be on stage at Smiley's Schooner Saloon in Bolinas on Friday night. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.